citation up, but just the case aside in the American jurisprudence under H would be an example.
I guess I'm referring, if I may, Mr. Chair, to just the kind of legislation you have introduced in terms of stronger deterrence for people who abuse seniors. Have any states passed that sort of legislation?
My understanding is yes, but I don't have a citation. Right,
you don't know right how many states or which ones?
No, but there's constantly been a push in that direction. I do believe that Massachusetts has. I believe New York has, and
well, if that information is in the material you handed out, I'm sure I can find it.
No, but it's, I'm not sure. No, this material was called 2 or 4 years ago. And the proposal for this type of legislation had its origin in 1980, because there was a lot of pressure in 1980. You notice this convention, this conference in Massachusetts was in late 1980. The source book of legislation was in 1980, and most of this legislation has been in the last 4 years has been discussed. Now, I'd be glad to try to run that down.
I'd appreciate that.
But,
that would be helpful.
I think the important point to make is that age and sex have been used as statutory means for aggravation. We're having a problem right now, you know, with juvenile pornography, and it's an age-based statute.
If I may continue, I think we do that sometimes because children until they're 18 are not really, as I understand the law, are not really considered adults in a variety of ways where anyone over 18 is. But I would appreciate it if you could
find out. I'll see if I can go to Amjur and trace that down and see if there's been any. We don't have a handy mechanism for finding those statutes without sitting down and going to 50.
I would suspect some of the senior groups might be able to pull that.
They're even less able than a lawyer is to find those.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give it a college try.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 451? We'll close the hearing and work session. Where we in work session? Close the hearing on Senate Bill 451 and move to House Bill 2429. That's right, counsel. Excuse me. Yes.
Which one?
It's these three up together.
2429, 3006, 3030. All right. Excuse me? Oh, I could have gone to that next. Okay, well, anyway. Mr. Cornrose?
Yes. I superposed amendments to take care of the problem with the allocation of resources formula.
For the record, Cy Cornbrook, Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. I have shown this amendment, this proposed amendment, to Representative Campbell, the chief sponsor, and it meets with his approval. What this amendment would do would be to reduce even further than this the personnel services section, because what happens is, as I took you through the other day, there's a very complicated formula for determining how people shall be classified
and what level of supervision, and that takes into account the history risk score and the crime severity category.
What this would do would say that everybody that hits a year,
that's all we're about supervising them now.
For the rest of that time, as long as they were in compliance with the conditions of their parole, they were involved in any treatment that was mandated, they weren't obviously in having legal problems, they would be classified as a type 4. That's the lowest level, and one caseload involves some 202 persons. Yet they would get, they mail in the monthly reports, so the current address and the would be available. They would stay in the LEDS system. So what this would do would be achieve that LEDS monitoring of the people during that period, but at a minimal cost. So it would reduce the, I talked to the legislative fiscal analyst about it, but she indicated to me that she, of course, could not do an analysis unless that amendment had been offered here with the committee. But I believe it will reduce that personal services from $570,000 and from $1,052,000 considerably in the future. This class four would go up from 25% to over 80%. On this, because the people that get through the first year basically are the people that are giving us the least problems. This is not an attempt to build in supervision of sex offenders. This bill is an attempt to keep them into the system for the tracking purposes of the LED system, and this amendment is an attempt to do that at a minimal cost to the state. Questions
for Mr. Farnbrook?
That may be rather inartfully drafted, as I did that the other evening before driving to Medford.
Probably have felt coming, right? Okay.
As to 3006,
we figured out that about 75% of those persons who would be, who they estimate would be covered by 3006, are already covered under that they already have those conditions. There is no money presently being spent on them, and yet we're not having a great deal of problems with people not being in treatment, that we don't violate people if the only reason that they can't be in treatment is financial. So we do not see, in spite of that, we cannot understand how there's a financial impact when you don't have one now, when we've been operating for years with those very conditions on a substantial amount of the sex offenders at the present time, that suddenly we're going to move in and throw money at it. And that hasn't been the case up to now, and we don't know why suddenly the Corrections Division is throwing up its arms when they've been going along quite merrily for a long time with sex offenders under those very conditions. Never heard a word about it.
Representative Popescu, you moaned as if you had a question.
I just saw the fiscal impact on 3006. But
we've had some unusual fiscal impact there.
Yes. Also, I guess on page 2.
Which? 3006?
Yes. Were there amendments prepared, or are there amendments prepared about?
Yes, I offered an amendment. I offered an amendment, and I probably don't have a copy with me, that would go right after line 18, that would indicate that no persons
line 18 on page 2.
No, I'm sorry, it wouldn't be after. It'd be after line 12. That no person's probation would be revoked solely on the basis of a deceptive answer to a polygraph. A deceptive response to a polygraph.
I think it's the amount that members have. That's 526 by ACLU. We've got a real one. Legislative Council.
That's 2006.
Right. Is that the one we're working on now?
Yes. 3006.
Okay. There we go. So this is on page 2. So that's the ACLU amendment for 5 lines of the amendment.
Yeah, we think that's good policy to have that type of that in there anyway. We don't think it happens, but I don't think it should happen that somebody would have their probation revoked solely on that basis.
On page 4, line 15.
Yes, it would also, it would go into both places. One is parole and the other is probation conditions, Representative.
I don't know, I guess I have a question for counsel. I'm trying to think in terms of the Fitch case. Of,
Fitch was special?
Yes. If we, in, sort of in light of that opinion, if you think that we could do, require some probationers to pay for counseling. And I guess whether we get into a whole equal protection question.
I'm afraid, Representative Kopetke, I'm not following your reasoning. I'm thinking about the Fitch versus Belshaw case and,
yeah,
and the fact that you couldn't...
That was recoupment.
That was recoupment, that's right. And that you couldn't recoup from people that weren't convicted of a crime. And there were cases, in that case, there were three or four people. One had been dismissed, one had been acquitted. The question was, could you recoup from them? And the statute was found to be... inadequate because it didn't set the proper standards by which a court was to make that kind of determination. But I'm not following the reasoning from that case.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if it's there or not. Well, let me just ask you about equal protection issue argument in terms of the lines 13 and 14. I mean, some would be saying if you got the money to do it, you got to pay yourself. And the others. And then I guess if they're indigent, then what the state would pay for the counseling.
Is that? I don't know whether that was the design of the legislation or not. I'm sorry.
No, it was not. The state, as I indicated, 75% of the people who come under this bill are already under those conditions of probation, which are part of the special conditions of probation that are in the law right now. There is no money. We operate without money imposing those conditions right now. Most of the offenders and the sex offenders pay themselves. A few of them we can get through into mental health programs and other programs, and those that absolutely can't, don't. We do not revoke them. It's obvious we can't revoke them, but purely based on an inability to pay. We don't revoke anybody who has a payment obligation based purely on an inability to pay. There has to be a willful violation of probation before you can be revoked. And an inability to pay is not cannot be considered a willful violation of the conditions of probation. So that's... But what our experience has been with sex offenders, that they meet a different profile than the others.
Sure. Representative Popet.
Let me ask this then. I don't know if I asked you this before, because I've asked this same question a couple of times when fees, attaching fees to convicted individuals comes up. I mean, these folks, as you're fully aware, have fines and assessments that they're going to have to pay. Now we're saying polygraphs and counseling for victims, and which is, you know, very fine, but I guess, you know, I keep looking at Representative Hill's bill, which, you know, is going to build some more space, hard space out there for some, you know, criminals that need to be in hard spaces aren't. And I, you know, what priority does these things have over other fines and assessments? What is your intent there? I mean, does this mean we aren't going to be able to build more prisons in regional jail? Do these people have any money? Well, I know that answer. That's another question.
I think that when you deal in the scheme of things with sex offenders, that population, probably the treatment aspect takes a greater priority, because if somebody has extra, say somebody has $100 extra spendable in a month for them, that they can spend for these type of things, and they have fines and counseling and supervision fees amounting to $150. We would probably want to see the treatment come first. First of all, this isn't the largest population in the division. But the problem is, if we don't have the treatment come first, the financial impact down the line with the new criminal activity outweighs the collecting of the other. Luckily, with the sex offenders, we are generally able to get everything. They're the ones that come in and pay the supervision fees and pay the restitution like clockwork and pay their things, because they generally are the ones with jobs, unlike the rest of our, the burglars and the check writers and the high school dropouts who stood around street corners. The sex offenders are, for the most part, a different population. So.
Okay. Are there any further questions about Mr. Carnbrook's proposed amendment? Si, have you had a chance to bounce this off the folks with the Corrections Division?
I gave Bob Watson a copy yesterday.
It's my understanding Mr. Watson and Ms. Garris are both out of the city.
Apparently. I was in Medford with them yesterday.
Must have been a very nice party.
Yes. I gave the amendment to Bob. He indicated he liked it. He liked that idea that they would be basically by fours.
They don't have any objection to this, then?
No. And okay. Representative Campbell has no objection to it either.
Okay. Are there any questions about this amendment? Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, there's actually not any question about the amendment, but I must confess I'm a little confused about 2429 and 3006. If they're two separate bills, if we have put a part of one into the other, or we're truly not dealing with two separate bills?
Not yet. You have not done that as yet. So far, you were doing, as far as I know, you were dealing with two separate bills up to this.
That's correct. I think at some point the possibility has been raised of merging the bills, one into the other. The chair really has no preference in terms of merging them, treating them separately. There might be some argument to be made for merging them so that they're reasonably related, assuming the sponsors have no objection to that. I don't know if Campbell's been presented with that possibility, but
I believe he was presented with the possibility of merging his 3006 into 2429, and as far as I know, he did not object. No objections to that.
Okay, there's some merit to combining the two bills, I think, just to sort of keep, since the issues are reasonably related, unless. But the chair is really, that's a matter for the committee to decide. Saeed, did you have something you wanted to add?
I just wanted to point out to you that you were here a minute ago, but in this latest fiscal proposal, there's a breakdown by type classes of probationers and parolees, with the class 4 being only 25%. I believe this amendment would change that to about 80% class 4.
because we'd eliminate the timelines and the crime severity and that type of thing. They just all go into it at the end of the year if they were in compliance.
Okay. Would it be your position that adoption of your amendment would probably reduce further the fiscal impact?
I think it would more than cut it in half as far as the personnel services, probably on both of those top two items, it would greatly reduce it because you could case bank everybody.
Okay, but there still would be some fiscal impact.
There'd be some, but it would not be nothing like this particular fiscal impact.
Okay. Well, okay. Are members prepared to take action on Mr. Kronbrot's amendments? Senator Kopetsky?
Mr. Chair, I move the, if you'd like, I move the legislative council amendments to 3006 and then move the 3006 as an amendment to 2429.
And Mr. Kronbrot's amendment?
Yes.
Okay, why don't we deal first with Mr. Kronbrot's, then deal with the amendment to 3006, and then 3006 as amended into 2429.
Mr. Chair, if you want to do it backwards, it's fine with me.
Or Representative Kopetsky, however you want to do it.
No, you're the chair. Mr. Chair, I'd move the cycling growth amendment subject proposed to House Bill 2429 relating to line 22 on page 2. Bill.
Okay.
I think council or legislative council might want to fix the language.
I'm sure the council is going to make the appropriate form and style corrections. Okay, Representative Kopetsky so moves the Kronbrot amendments. Is there any objection to those amendments? If not, adopted. Representative Kopetsky?
What was I supposed to do next?
I think you wanted to move the amendments to 3006?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the legislative council amendments to 3006-1 dated 5/29/85.
Okay, do all members have copies of that before them? Are there any questions about the amendments? Representative Peterson, did you have a question you wanted to ask?
No, I found my copy.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the amendments and Representative Kopetsky's motion? Any objection to that amendment to 3006 prepared by LC designated HB 3006-1? Any objection? If not, it's adopted. Representative Kopetsky, did you want to then move 3006 into 2429?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky moves conceptually that the provisions of, and let's double check the relating clause, we've got relating to crime basically is going into registration of sex offenders.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I'm almost thinking that if we're dealing just with relating clauses, it might want to go the other way around, 2429 into 3006, but I'm kind of, council has just pointed that out. I don't know if that's a problem or not.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopetsky.
Having looked around this place in terms of germaneness and relating clauses, I think both bills deal with sex offenders, and I think subjects of the bill are germane to each other, and I don't think it makes a difference.
Representative Kopetsky, let's try to deal with it this way. I think the substance of your proposal is to merge the two bills.
Yes.
And subject to consultation and review by full committee, after consultation with legislative council and our own council, can we await their recommendation at full committee as to which bill, quote, becomes the more appropriate vehicle given the relating clause?
Yes.
Would that be okay?
Great.
Okay, but the essence of your motion would be to put the two bills together?
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of pick a number, like a lottery.
Yeah. That's lotto, I think.
Chairman?
Representative Miller.
Well, I think our council's point is well taken. We had a measure that had a similar question asking the state and federal the other day, and they seemed to place an awful lot of import on the verbiage rather than we had one where the verbiage was different with the same statutes involved, and they wanted to blend the less descriptive into the more general. So I think, therefore, that's probably the right way to go to 2429 and 3006.
Okay. Well, let's kind of leave that somewhat. I appreciate that comment. That may be the recommendation, just as long as we're clear that we're merging the two bills together, and it could be 3006, and maybe more likely that it will be 3006, but we will reserve final judgment on that until we've heard some further advice. Is there any discussion on that motion to merge the two bills? Any objection to that? If not, that's adopted. Representative Kopeski, I think a motion then to the full committee of the merged bills, and I think that there appears, notwithstanding the amendments we just adopted, to be some fiscal impact, which it would appear would mean the bill should go to Ways and Means Committee. And we'll ask them to, if we can, very quickly to crunch the numbers again in light of the amendment, see if we can reduce that further by full committee. If by full committee that referral is not necessary, we can reconsider that issue at that time. But at this point, I think a motion with a referral is probably more appropriate.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill. I'd move the merged House Bills 24 and 29 and 3006 to the full committee with due pass recommendation, and that they be, it be subsequently referred to the Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Kopeski moves the two bills together as one bill to full committee with a due pass recommendation and further recommendation that be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Springer.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Thanks very much, Cy, and to folks from the sponsors' offices who worked very hard on this subject. Representative Hill, 3030. Let me note while they're coming up, sorry for the delay, Representative Hill, appreciate your patience. Though it had been earlier indicated to us that we would be excused by the speaker from floor session, we've been later advised that the speaker is asking everyone to return to the floor promptly, and it will then be decided on the floor what committees will be released to return to work. So we're going to go through that little exercise at about 4 o'clock, and then hopefully we'll be able to return without too much delay to
continue
our work session.
Hopefully I'll gain an excuse as well. I'll start the testimony. You've got two pieces of information being passed out. I'd like to look at the testimony in support of 3030 first, with that paper with that heading. The purpose of House Bill 3030 is simple. I'll be addressing first Section 3. Section 3 and 4 of the bill are the sections that pertain to the so-called Son of Sam statute. Following that, I'll address Sections 1 and 2. We want to ensure with these sections that a victim of compensable crime, as defined in the statutes, may recover damages or judgments from profits earned by the criminal who committed the crime for the sale of the story of the criminal act, particularly in the case of infamous crimes that have received a lot of publicity. It's abhorrent to one's sense of decency and justice that a criminal may receive large sums of money while other people are dead or injured as a result of the criminal's conduct. This bill makes it clear that in this instance, the victim is more important than the criminal. At a time in which it's becoming commonplace for convicted felons to make monetary gains by selling the rights of their story, many states have adopted legislation which affects these actions. Such statutes, first enacted in New York in 1977, have now been adopted by 18 states. In addition, the federal government has adopted such a statute, the Victims of Crime Act of 1984, and is encouraging further adoption by states. Such laws are commonly referred to as Son of Sam laws as a result of the Son of Sam criminal murders in 1977 in New York. David Berkowitz, the so-called Son of Sam, later sold his story to McGraw-Hill for an undisclosed sum. Generally, most state Son of Sam laws have language similar to New York's. Under these laws, including 3030, the government acts as an escrow agent, usually under a 5-year escrow account. The criminal retains legal title to the funds until they are paid out to the victim or creditors. If the victim is unsuccessful in obtaining money judgments, or if the criminal charges are dismissed, the government is required to pay immediately the escrow funds to the formerly accused criminal. In examining the proposed bill, it is important to establish what purposes it does not seek to achieve. House Bill 303-30 is not intended to and will not have the effect of deterring the criminal from telling the circumstances surrounding the commission of the crime or to tell her thoughts or feelings about a crime. Also, the proposed bill does not attempt to compensate victims. Years following that point. During that period, the bill would have the Department of Justice attempting to notify the victims there is cash available if they institute a right of action under other statutes and existing rights of action.
The question I would ask you is, what other right of action does a victim have, in your opinion? I mean,
what existing right of action?
Because I wasn't clear when I was reading whether you were talking about the restitution that a judge orders to a victim, say when the defendant is sentenced, or whether you're talking about a civil right of action for damages.
Both.
We're talking about both. So you're really talking about general civil right of action for damages that may exist for a victim on the civil side of things.
Yes. Any right of action that a victim may currently have springing from the damages they suffered in that crime. Any judgment, whether it's restitution or whether it's a civil judgment, independent civil case that they filed, either at that time or later within the statute of limitations, any judgment could attach the funds in this escrow account. That's the way it is in most of the other states, although we're creating no new right of action.
Representative Hill, this important discussion we're having, I know there are more questions. I have some. I know Representative Kapinski has some. I have a message from the speaker that says that Representative Larry Hill is required on the floor now.
Okay, now is underlined.
Now is underlined. So I think
now is.
You're excused for that purpose. if you wish to come back
to
Representative
to go.
Later this afternoon or early evening, whichever it's going to be, and rejoin us, you're welcome. If you're unable to, and we will hope to continue this. Tomorrow, as we hope to with the rest of the bills we don't get to today.
Okay?
Thank you. I want to take up a couple Senate bills because we've had people unfortunately waiting here most of the afternoon, and it's their second afternoon with us, which we're certainly glad to have them here, but I know that they have other things to do as well. So I'd like to take up 148, and then we'll move to 451 and the rest of the Senate bills we have before us.
Sorry, 148.
Counsel, this relates to the implied consent laws and changing those laws to alter the certification that is now required as a prerequisite to an individual being qualified to testify as to chemical tests performed on blood for determining the amount of blood alcohol for purposes in trial. Did we have any amendments on that, Council?
There are no amendments offered to the Senate bill at this time.
Yeah, I'm not sure we had any adverse testimony.
We had no adverse testimony. We had testimony from Carl Satterfield, who supported it, from the Mad Mothers. We had Mr. Mark McDonald from the Oregon District Witches Association saying this is one of their four priority bills. We had a captain from the state police who supports it. I think it was Captain Brooke.
He's here, and
yes,
he's nodding yes.
And Jane Aiken supported it from as member of the governor's team.
Representative Kopetsky.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 148 be engrossed to the full committee to pass the recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Kopetsky moves Senate Bill 148 be engrossed to the full committee to pass. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Phillips. Aye.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Council, may we expect to see this no later than Monday?
Yes.
Assuming we're still in session and meeting on Monday.
We'll see.
Okay. Thank you. Let's deal with H-61. This is the military justice bill.
Oh, yeah.
I believe we've got Colonel Lockwood prepared to answer any questions. I don't recall any adverse testimony, Council. Colonel Lockwood, I know, is prepared to respond to questions.
There was no adverse testimony, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and this basically, as I understand it, would revise the Code of Military Justice as it relates to members of the Oregon National Guard to make it more consistent with changes which have taken place in federal law and the Federal Code of Military Justice, and further defines to whom the state law shall apply as opposed to the federal law, which has to do with the duty status of individuals who serve in various components, active or inactive duty. Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 861A engrossed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Miller moves Senate Bill 861A engrossed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Kopetsky.
There's a famous quote by former Senator Sam Ervin about military justice, and I hope that this bill helps make that quote wrong.
Representative Kopetsky, do you want to share the quote with us?
Or would not publicly. I think not. Colonel Lockwood knows it.
Colonel Lockwood may be familiar with it, so he, I'm sure, wouldn't be offended. I hope. Any further discussion or comment on Senate Bill 861? Some people might say the same thing about us, Representative Kopetsky, so. If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Peterson. Aye.
Phillips. Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Again, we will schedule this for Monday for full committee. Thank you, Colonel Lockwood. It probably won't be necessary for you to be here at that time. I hate to take your time away from your other duties. If something comes up, however, and we need to call you, are you available locally here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Council will contact you if for any reason it appears it's going to be necessary for you to be here on Monday.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Probably just as well, you didn't say.
Yeah.
451.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 451 to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Okay. Ms. Hertzmark, you're making a funny face at me here. Did you want to testify on that bill? I'm sorry, you were on the possibly on the sign up list and I missed you, so I want to allow you that opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did indeed testify at the original hearing on 451, and I don't have anything else to add. Marcy Hertzmark, Metropolitan Defenders, except that to emphasize one thing that Senator Brown mentioned, that indeed these few factors of age and vulnerability and the situation that the victim is in are already taken into consideration when the nature system said is considered, and the public defenders feel that is the appropriate place to have that consideration taken instead of putting it into the statutes, because we are indeed creating special categories instead of general, which is the whole intent. Thank you.
Nice try. Thank you. Any questions from Ms. Hertzmark?
Did you take a motion?
Yes, the motion was taken. It was not placed, Howard. The chair will place the motion at this time. Representative Phillips moves Senate Bill 451 to the committee with a due pass recommendation. Representative Phillips?
the bill should pass.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment to the bill.
Representative Kopetsky, two-year amendment.
Yes, I'd like to amend House Bill, the Senate Bill 451 with the sections 1 and 2 of Representative Hill's House Bill 3030. I'm sorry.
Could we have an encore of that, please?
Oh, yes. If you look at with the language in lines of House Bill 3030, it's sort of the counterpart, I guess, of Senate Bill 451, which would enhance penalties for people under 18.
Okay. Nice try.
And since I think both these bills have fiscal impacts, I think the motion ought to be that they go down to Ways and Means, and maybe we ought to just send both of them down to Ways and Means in the same vehicle.
Well, I'm going to treat your motion as an amendment, unfriendly amendment. Is that correct? Representative Phillips has indicated it would be an unfriendly amendment, so I'm going to treat your motion as a motion to amend his motion. And I think, if I understand it, you're proposing to take sections 1 and 2 from House Bill 3030 and add 2, or is it just section 1?
Section 1 and 2, I guess. Section 1 is just where you place it in the ORS, Chapter 163. So
okay, and could you...
The intent is there.
Okay, counsel, what are the two relating clauses again?
They're relating to crimes on Senate Bill 451 and 3030.
Relating to crime.
Right.
That's probably close enough. Okay, the motion before us is Representative Kopetsky's motion. Representative Kopetsky, I would prefer to deal with the issue of the fiscal impact and referral of the Ways and Means as a separate motion. Can we do it that way? Are there any questions about the nature of Representative Kopetsky's motion on the amendment to Senate Bill 451? Any discussion on that? Okay. Clerk will call the roll on Representative Kopetsky's motion.
Hill?
No.
Kopetsky?
Yes.
Miller?
No.
Peterson?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Representative Kopetsky?
Yes, I have been kind of holding in my office a draft language to enhance some crimes in the child abuse area, enhancing the crimes from Class B felony to Class A felony. I would ask the chair for the opportunity to delay action on Senate Bill 451 so that I could bring the language before the subcommittee and enhance that crime as well.
Representative Kopetsky, rather than delay action today, I think what I would propose is that if you wish to prepare such language, I would be more than glad to entertain that language as a motion in full committee.
Okay. How about my little thing on the fiscal impact? I noticed, I don't even know, did we get a fiscal impact on the
I'm not aware that we have. I would be more than glad, if there's favorable action today on the bill, to direct the council request as soon as possible a fiscal impact statement. And if you wish that request should reflect any specific inquiries along the lines about which you expressed some concern, be more than glad to make that part of council's instructions.
Yes, if that means in terms of impact on prison space, jail space, and the minimum dollar amount of cost to the state general fund and this indeterminate stuff. I mean, if they want to say, you know, $50 minimum, but it's indeterminate above that, that would satisfy me.
Okay, if you would get together with council, if necessary, to further refine that. Okay. And as far as the additional amendments, Representative Kopetsky, I know your desire to ask us to set this over. I don't know what the committee is going to do on the actual main motion, but if this moves to main committee, I'd be more than glad to allow you the opportunity to offer those amendments to full committee.
Would you like my speech against the bill in subcommittee or full committee?
Full committee. Okay, are there any other amendments to the main question?
I can't think of any more.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion on the bill 451 unamended to the full committee do pass? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hill?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Phillips?
Aye.
For purposes of moving this to full committee, aye. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
259. Mr. Blank, I understand, has been patient here all afternoon. We've had this up a couple times, and just last week, I think, I received a letter from Mr. Schrunk. Although we haven't been privileged with a personal appearance yet from someone from the DA's office, and we appreciate you taking time to join us, Harold.
Chairman. My name is Harold Blank. I'm a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County, Portland, and I'm the manager of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Child Support Enforcement Division. I believe that our district attorney, Multnomah County, Mr. Schrunk, did submit a written statement that he's used. And quite frankly, I have nothing to add to that. We're experiencing more and more cases in Multnomah County, child support cases, in which the non-custodial obligor, or mother, father, has two or more ex-families. Perhaps as many as three ex-families with children and court orders requiring that he provide monthly child support. The result is that one or more of the custodial parents come to our office seeking our help in collecting support and asking that we open a collection file. Now, regardless of the order in which the divorce has occurred, whoever gets to my lobby first and opens the file is the person that we represent. And then as the years have gone by, we've been experiencing and seeing many, many situations where the second and third ex-families also come to our office and ask our help in collecting child support. Well, the upshot is that the district attorney, like any other attorney, must have undivided loyalty, undivided allegiance to one client and one client only. And particularly in these non-support cases, because we're all chasing the same assets, resources, and income of the non-supporting parent. We're all trying to garnish the same wages. Or we're all trying to bring them into court to answer contempt charge resulting from his failure to pay support for these various families. So we take the position in Multnomah County and the other district attorneys throughout Oregon that we can only legitimately represent one family. When another family seeks our help, it's the practice to ask the court to appoint a special prosecutor. And then that person serves under the authority, same authority that the district attorney would have in child support matters specified in Chapter 23 of ORS. Now, the practice has been that the district attorney who is unable to serve has been paying for the legal services of the special prosecutor. That's primarily the reason the bill was drafted and submitted for your consideration. It's totally inappropriate for any attorney, including the district attorney, to be funding and financing his own opposition. It's almost a matter of being disloyal to his first client, to the person on whose behalf we opened our file and we're seeking to collect support. We're asking for the state, only in child support cases and restraining order violation cases, pay the expenses of the special prosecutor appointed by the judge to serve when the district attorney is unable to serve. We're not asking that the state pay these fees in the entire broad range, broad spectrum of criminal cases, but only in the isolated non-support and domestic violence. Now, the domestic violence conflicts are very, very rare indeed. I think in the past 3.5 years since the Oregon Family Abuse Prevention Act has been operating in Oregon, I dare say that we haven't had more than one or two conflict cases in connection with appointing a special prosecutor in a domestic violence restraining order situation. Usually that occurs where the restraining order is mutual, and each is accusing the other of violating it, and each is seeking prosecution. But the bill is primarily addressed to the child support situations. Now, in the statement that Mr. Schrunk submitted, there is a statement near the end that the expected expense for the biennium would be about $18,000, of which the federal government, under Title 40 of the Social Security Act, pays 70%. So the state can probably look towards an out-of-pocket expense of about $5,400 or so for the biennium, and the balance would be picked up by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. In all candor, I must inform the committee that effective with the federal fiscal year 1988, that federal funding participation will be reduced from 70% down to 68%, will drop by 3%. So the state share of these expenses would probably go up a few hundred dollars in the federal fiscal year 1988. And that's our position.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. Blank? If not, counsel, I don't believe this has a subsequent referral, notwithstanding the somewhat $5,000 or $6,000 fiscal impact. I'm assuming that the fiscal impact apparently was not of the significance that the Speaker felt it was necessary, either or the President of the Senate on either side, to re-refer this to Ways and Means, and unless there's some desire to do so, I would intend to report it to the floor without such a re-referral. And I think we're prepared at this time to take a motion on the bill to full committee. Representative Peterson?
I would move Senate Bill 259 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Peterson moves Senate Bill 259 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bill.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. And this will be up on Monday, and then I presume to the floor by shortly thereafter. We are accelerating our schedule in light of the impending sine die, but I think that given the 7 bills, that there's no problem at this point.
Thank you. There'll be no need for me to return unless
No, there should not be. I can't anticipate the circumstances. If for some reason there is, counsel will contact you and advise you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Appreciate it. Okay. We've got 2648. I think the proponents for amendments to that are not with us right at the moment. And let's see if we can take Senate Bill 400 and make some progress there. Council, do you want to advise us on the status and of the amendments, if any, that have been proposed?
Yes. We had Ms. Anita Paulson, who's present today, appear in support of this bill. We also had Judge Bonebrake. At the end of the last subcommittee hearing, the chair asked Judge Bonebrake and Ms. Paulson to get together and agree upon amendment to, I believe it was, Section 3 of the bill, because there was a question about whether the 14-day period in the bill in which the judge had to hold a hearing was sufficient for the judges. My information is that the Ms. Paulson and Judge Bonebrake agreed upon a 21-day period, so there would be an amendment to the bill that would allow for a 21-day period. In addition, there was a letter from an attorney in Eugene, Steve Shepard, who had some questions about the bill. I've been advised that those problems have been resolved and that
no further amending of the bill is necessary at this point.
Okay, so the issue that Mr. Shepherd has raised in his letter is moot at this point.
That's right.
Okay, we have, I think, or I do recall that Representative Young had presented to us some additional amendments, some of which relate to Section 1 of the bill, some of which relate further to Section 3 of the bill and Section 4 of the bill. And there may be other portions of the bill as well. And one also which would have changed the burden of proof from preponderance of the evidence to clear and convincing evidence. I guess, Ms. Paulson, why don't you come up and join us here at the bar?
My name is Anita Paulson, Oregon Legal Services, and I'm representing the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. I might say that amendments that were proposed by Representative Young, many of were in 536, which was proposed by the Ads Pack and were not considered at all in the Senate sign. And if any of those amendments were amended into Senate Bill 400, the coalition would not want to see anything happen with the bill at all.
Well, that is fairly clear. Now, I understand that you have reached a compromise for the 21 days on line 9, page 2. Is that correct?
Yes. The 21 days was to take care of a judge in Eastern Oregon that rides circuit and the fear that they may not be able to meet the 14-day deadline. And so it's extended to 21.
Okay, and that's acceptable to your folks?
Yes.
Okay. The chair would move on page 2, line 9, that 14 days be amended to read 21 days. Any discussion of that amendment? Is there any objection to that amendment? If not, it's adopted. Any other motions on amendments? If not, is there a motion on the bill as amended? Representative Peterson?
Mr. Chair, I would move the amended Senate Bill 400 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Peterson moves Senate Bill 400 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bill?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Quorum being present, a majority of those present and voting are sufficient to take any action in subcommittee except tabling, which requires 4 votes. Okay, again, this should be up Monday. It is amended. We're accelerating schedules daily, so hopefully even an amended Senate bill is not at jeopardy at this point, but we know you will help us keep an eye on that. Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
2648. My office has been working with the proponents to get some amendments on this bill, which was last heard some time ago. Mr. Austin, do you have a copy of those amendments, and are you prepared to speak to them at this time?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Excuse me. There's a taco salad at lunch. I just caught up with him. I want to identify who is responsible for preparing.
I'll be sure to relay it to your concerns.
Okay. Mr. Austin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Austin. I'm the president of Veterans Northwest. Based out of Portland, Oregon. We originally proposed this piece of legislation due to the problems we'd been having getting access to veterans that were accused of a crime. The proposed amendments, House Bill 2648-1, dated 6585, are not close to what we came to this body hoping to get. it's my understanding that we may be lucky to get even this. I think I provided a copy of an article entitled Paying the Price for Vietnam, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and Criminal Behavior to each of you at some point within the last few weeks. This proves the original bill and the need for it. In no uncertain terms, it also shows that it's working in a number of different jurisdictions. If this is all that we can get out of Oregon at this point, I'm willing to go with it. But I would ask, Mr. Chair, that during the interim, we take another look at this and see what we can do about getting some people in there to advocate for the veteran. Because Lord knows, at this point, he hasn't got anybody.
Okay. Now, basically, your amendments, forget the original bill and just look at these amendments, correct?
If this is all we can get at this point, and then let's look at it in the interim and see what we can do about expanding this to some direction of what we had in the original idea.
Okay. Can you just review very briefly for us, session's concluded, by the way. If you could share with us briefly what is encompassed within these amendments.
Basically, the new amendments define post-traumatic stress, define veteran, goes on to talk about the veteran being charged with a crime other than driving under the influence of intoxicants, which is already covered under a separate diversion program. And the fact that the defendant veteran may request psychiatric assistance in presenting the connection between post-traumatic stress disorder and the crime. The court would then, as I understand the amendments, provide access to a psychiatrist for those indigent veterans who would not be able to pay for one. It also provides that the judge would then take into consideration these facts and either order diversion or continue prosecution. It also sets conditions that the court may want to determine as being part of the diversion program. It puts the responsibility for monitoring the diversion program into the hands of the district attorney. That's in section 4, as I understand.